Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is now time for Inside Matters, Spiritual Talk, Healing Done Right, Spiritual Growth, 12-Step Indigo Meditation, and much, much more, hosted by Duchess and Jules.
Family, I hope we're on because I don't know. We've been having technical difficulties for the last two up shows. Hopefully, this is going to work because there's a lot of things going on in this studio that say that I need to be doing this and I need to be doing that. And we'll see after the show is over if a show was recorded. That's a sad thing to have to say, but hey, that's the way it is. Happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there and to all you single female heads of households who are forced in some way, shape, or other to play both roles in your house. May you have peace and blessings on this Father's Day. And I guess we need to also say, happy Juneteenth. Now that it's the national holiday, everybody gets to celebrate it, and we don't celebrate it by ourselves like we used to have to do. For those of you who aren't familiar with Juneteenth, Juneteenth, well, it's short for June 19th, so it's called Juneteenth. It marks the day when federal troops arrived in Galveston, Texas. That was around 1865 to take control of the state and ensure that all enslaved people be freed. The troops arrived. Well, their arrival came fully 2 years and 2.5 years. Let me get that right. 2.5 years after the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation. And Juneteenth honors the end of slavery in the United States and is considered the longest running African-American holiday, okay? So on June 17th, 2021, it officially became a federal holiday. Whoopee for us. We have another federal holiday to honor us. Well, I think we have a guest speaker that's going to say, that's fantastic. Give us more. We deserve more than just a federal holiday. We'll hear a little bit of that in a moment. Before we go there, I want to share a little notice, some words from Kryon. Those of you who are familiar with programming know that Kryon is an angelic energy that is channeled through Lee Carroll. And once in a while, Kryon has some notes to say to folks about what's going on within their internal system. You know, the system that exists between human and spirit. Well, Kryon is saying that the system that exists between human and spirit, he says they think it's designed by humanity, but they are not here to push you around that existence. It's not here to push you around. It's here to teach and to help. If you let them, you know. There was some personal insight from Lee Carroll. And Lee Carroll was saying, what if everything around you is like some kind of simulation to help you find and understand a greater truth? What if everything on this planet that seems random is actually being created for you? Ever since science is beginning to run the numbers on the theory that you were created totally by random, their conclusion, your existence right here, right now, could not have been random. There must be some intelligence and intent in the design of life in general and humanity in particular. So the relationships you have to the Creator, to nature, to the elements, and even to the physics of the universe, all are here to work with you and not to oppose you. We are part of a divine creation that is on purpose, and the universe will respond accordingly. Help from spirit is actually built in the systems of our life. Kryon's instructions have always been to expect, did you hear me? Expect this help, and it will be shown to you. Like, wow. For me, this is the opposite of just about everything I was told. This concept puts an end to thinking that there are energies that oppose us or that the world is against us and we don't have a chance. Instead, we are asked to claim the help that is already there from a benevolent family who knows us and our circumstances. We will expect help from spirit. Okay. How's everything going? Are we all here? Why don't we introduce our guest speaker? Well, she's really not a guest speaker. This is her show every third Sunday of the month. And so, without further ado, let me open up the mic for Aoife Bio to come in and have her words of wisdom. Aoife Bio, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, a little bit, you know, wonky these days. You know, we've been having difficulties, so I don't even know if we're being recorded. But we're going to go on with the show anyway because I see there are guests coming online as we speak. So
okay.
They can hear what you're saying, even if it's not being recorded.
Okay.
Go for it. What?
Well,
the quest for a new Black Wall Street, this is where we're going, dream of community revitalization. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I have been reflecting on this, particularly since they passed the national holiday of Juneteenth, right?
I figured you would have something to say about that. Go for it. Sorry.
I have mixed feelings. I am of two minds, I guess, and I'm hoping that the internal dissonance will at some point resolve itself. But my brother, who is often an outlier in such things, just helped to reinforce the other voice that I have in my head, right? So I call him and I say, hey, brother, you know, happy Juneteenth, you know, because we celebrated yesterday. It was our 21st celebration here in upstate New York in the area where I'm at. It was the 21st year for us. And he immediately was like, okay, sis, I need you to understand this. Okay, I'm going to say this, and then we're going to move on, okay? And I'm like, oh, Lord, here we go, you know. So he's like, I am really upset that they passed this Juneteenth holiday celebration. And I was like, okay, why? And he was like, you know what? Why are we celebrating nationally that they kept us enslaved longer than they should have? He was like, no, I'm not happy about that. I'm pissed off. And every time they say happy Juneteenth to me, it just exacerbates.
I get it.
This right? feeling that I have, why would the United States in a time like this, and everything that we're dealing with people who hate us, this is my voice, right, reinforcing his, choose to celebrate a holiday of all the other things that they could have picked out for us They choose to celebrate the one in which they kept us enslaved in bondage longer.
2.5 years longer.
Right.
Hallelujah. Got a point.
Right. So I was like, oh, gosh, I'm trying to, you know, quail all of what it is I feel and see in terms of us moving possibly into our next level of Jim Crow and having the government kind of turn its back on us and reinforce, when I say us, the disenfranchised, African Americans, the poor, on and on and on, okay? People of color, Native Americans, to the holiday that, you know, basically celebrates them getting over on us for free labor for another 2.5 years, right? And reinforces, right, in some minds of those who are white supremacists, you know, I'm going to really be upset if I see them out there celebrating Juneteenth too, okay? So I just had to say that and get that out of the way. And with that being said, I guess I applaud our country's attempt to do better. But I don't want to continue to support the illusion of them doing better, because I want them to do better. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They've said this out too many times along the lines, and I'm not willing to take that as a hurrah and a hooray, you know. So anyway, with that being said, I've been thinking about Black Wall Street, right? Because we were talking about last time understanding that the United States will probably, because they've shown us 400 years of this, not be willing to make amends, right, in terms of what harms they've perpetrated, not only on African Americans, but Native Americans, anyone who is of the other, right? And there have been some pushbacks in regards to reparations because white Americans who sit on the lands of people stolen, sometimes not once, but doubly and triple, you know, feel like they should not have to pay for what their ancestors did. And I think that's really a position of entitlement. That you can say such things because we are paying, and Native Americans are paying, and all poor people are paying continuously for what someone else's ancestors have done. So why shouldn't you have to pay for what your ancestors did? Mm. But anyway, so when I began to look at this thing about Black Wall Street and the kind of economic power that represented for us and where we would be potentially evolutionarily if we had been able to continue that progress that we made around those times, because what a lot of the conversations don't discuss is the fact that during that time, during the time of Black Wall Street and Rosewood and other communities that were prospering for African American communities, we as African Americans owned 60% of the banks in the country. And so what would we have looked like evolutionarily if these towns that were prospering financially had not continued to be disrupted in American society, right? And so, you know, even now, when we look at the kind of economic buying power we have, as African Americans, we're second behind Latinx, who have a $1.5 trillion buying power. We're now at $1.3 trillion in terms of buying power. And that's larger than the gross, the GDP of Australia, Mexico, the Netherlands, and Spain.
So why do you think we never like that?
You mean in terms of our buying power?
No, during in terms of, the percentage of us being lower than the percentages of other cultures.
Well, part of what's happening is there has been the other cultures, there's several things that are going on in relationship to that. Part of it is that... So here's what's happening in terms of our buying power. African Americans are second. Latinx are first. Asians are third. And Native Americans are fourth. Okay? And so if you look at the first buying power and the third buying power, they have a history of working within their own cultural, they bind together culturally.
Right.
They're gonna shop at an Asian store before they shop anywhere else. They're gonna shop at a Latinx store or support a Latinx contractor or what have you, before they support anyone else, okay? But their power to do so has not been disrupted. We kind of had a similar understanding in a way before we were kind of led to believe that what white Americans have is better than what we have. And Native Americans are kind of in that same boat, too. They have an interesting kind of love-hate relationship in the same way that we do. But I think it's because they've also suffered a level of oppression similar to us that Latinx and Asian Americans have not. Okay, they're kind of new. They entered, although they're being oppressed, they entered kind of newly into the levels of oppression that we've had. They haven't had 400 solid years of oppression, like we have had, okay? Or Native Americans have had,
And those other two cultures, they live together, they band together, they solidify together. I mean, they have a strength amongst themselves.
Right, but their cultural ties were never disrupted. See,
right.
We suffered, Native Americans and African Americans not only suffered the kind of penalties of death and oppression that are similar,
mm-hmm.
We also underwent a type of cultural genocide that's similar, They went about it differently with Native Americans. But that's why I think it's very interesting that now Native Americans understand that their sovereignty, they're coming to this consciousness, right? They are understanding that their sovereignty is also connected to Black liberation. So they're reaching across these cultural divides in order to reestablish relationships that can be beneficial to the both of us. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're bound together in ways that have destroyed us, that necessarily have not destroyed Asian culture and, Latinx cultures in the same way. I'm not saying they did not suffer oppression. I mean, even now, at least Asians they attempted to give them some part of restorative kind of reparational act when they interned them in the Japanese camps, okay? They never, right. They've not ever recognized Native Americans or African Americans that way. By the way, because Native Americans are still interned, right?
Right.
We just don't deal with it. We don't look at it that way, you know. And that's the tragedy, I think, of a lot of things that go on. They're happening right before our eyes, but they've been normalized so that we're not uncomfortable by them anymore, right?
Well, that's because we just don't openly see it. If we openly saw it, we would be uncomfortable. You know,
no, I think people of color openly see it.
Right.
But the agreement that we make with white culture is to allow them to avert their eyes.
Right? Yeah.
And that's why I said, it is our responsibility to understand that an amends cannot happen as long as people of color are, like, as long as this culture, this economy, this society, this America is dependent upon the cannibalization of black and brown bodies. An amendment from them cannot come. That's why the amendment has to come from, we have to make the amends. We have to do that work. We have to say, I'm no longer going to allow you to avert your eyes, right? Because I've allowed you to, you know, not look, to not be uncomfortable, to not do your work, and I've carried the karmic kind of historical weight and baggage for the both of us. No, I'm going to give you your baggage back. You know what I mean? I have my own. We have our own. But I'm definitely going to let you have your baggage back and hold you to that and move on away from that and do something different. And this is what makes me look back on Black Wall Street. And I look back there and I say, okay, you have once again an African-American who bought a large parcel of land from a Native American. You see here? Here's this relationship coming back together.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one that built the first business there, Mr. Gurley. He had a boarding house, and he would allow African Americans to come in. And even when an African American came and they wanted to start a business and they didn't have the money to start the business, he would loan them the money to start the business, right? And build from there. So once again, you see these two people who have suffered in similar ways, because captivity and bondage has different appearances for people, right? You know, they think bondage and captivity can only happen a certain way, but you have different levels of that actually come into effect. Right? And so now you have these two people who are saying, I know what it's like to have been held captive. I know what it's like to be held in bondage. And I'm going to sell you this land. And really, the Native American who sold the land was either from the Chickasaw or the Choctaw tribe. And they look just like us. Which is funny. They look like African Americans, right? Probably because there's been a mixing going on that whole entire time, right? So they sell the land. It's African American. He begins to establish the business that's located, you know, it's actually the Greenwood District, right? In Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it operates on the corner of like Greenwood Avenue and Archer Street.
Right.
And in this district, these people circulate their money 19 times before it flows out of their hands. Right?
Right.
So they're able to generate their own wealth. 19 times looks like 18 months. $1 staying in the same community before it goes anywhere else, right?
Okay, let's give people an example of that. You know, like I own a daycare. You
mm-hmm.
bring your children to my daycare.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? you work in the daycare. The
right.
next door neighbor has a bakery. We all spend
right.
our money at the bakery. The next
right.
door neighbor takes her product to your
right.
store, and you
right.
have a birthday party over at your house. Then you
exactly.
invite the neighbor across the street to your house who owns
right.
who owns the grocery store. You spend your
right.
money at the grocery store. The grocery store person who owns the grocery store has their child at the daycare, and people
right.
realize that your dollar has not flown out of that neighborhood because it goes
no.
from one owner to one worker, and they pay the salary of your child who goes to school
right.
in the neighborhood, who works after
That's
school
right.
at the grocery store.
That's right.
And that child goes down the street, and that child goes to the community center down the street.
That's
and,
right.
And
the music. Right. And the movie theater and the car shops and the clothing stores and the barber
yes,
and the beautician,
absolutely.
All of those things. They got all of their needs met without
and
having to leave.
Black Wall Street evolved.
Yes.
That's
exactly.
how Black Wall Street evolved. They
exactly.
brought their skills back in their own neighborhood, their own community,
definitely.
And everybody purchased from each other and utilized each other's skill or business
that's
or
right.
what was going on. Black Wall Street.
Right. Right. So the money never left. Now, right, we get a
mm-hmm.
dollar. It circulates in our community maybe twice. It's something like 1.57% before it's out of our hands.
Mm-hmm. It goes to Amazon.com.
And not just that. I mean, if you think about the corner stores used to be owned by people who look like us, but they're no longer owned by people who look like us.
No, they're not.
So you may take your child to the neighborhood child care provider who is someone who looks like you, right? That's one
mm-hmm.
time. And then that person may buy gas at the local gas station from someone who may look like you. It may just be someone of color, right?
Right.
But that person who you're getting the gas from doesn't live in the community. They probably live somewhere else. So you've given your money to them, and they're gone.
Right.
You've gone to the corner store. You've made your money. It's come into the house. You give it to your children, their allowance. They're spending it somewhere. It's already gone.
Right.
It is not enriching you. Okay. So my concern was that, or my concern is, it's the same concern that Lincoln had when he wrote, you know, the declaration that freed the slaves. His concern was that those who were held captive could not potentially live peacefully among their former captives.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the community, as the poor white people saw how well the others were flourishing in the community, they became more and more angry, right? Because there is this conception in America that whites should automatically give you certain privileges, because it had been that way for a very long time. And that's what happens when you do not correct a petulant child and tell them that they must accept that no's are also a part of real life, right? That you just don't get to have certain privileges because of your skin color. It should be based on something way beyond that, like your character, right? The content of your character, how well you work, how much you do for your community, on and on and on and on and on. Not simply you get given these things because you look a certain way. So after Gurley purchased this land, and he loaned the monies to these people, it was discovered that that particular section of Tulsa was also sitting on a lot of oil. It was a very wealthy piece of land. And I'm going to sidestep just a little bit here because I had an opportunity to be in, like, I had a 2-degree separation from a family named the Perrymans. One of my friends was, at the time, was married to one of the sons. And that son's grandfather, the Perrymans, were very well known. They owned all of the land that currently is Oklahoma City. And they were very well educated. They had gone to college. They were professional, what have you. But the grandfather could never get a position in outside of his community, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was other than being a broom sweeper, right? He had to sweep the broom. He was the person that swept up around the place. That's all they would let him have, even though he was more educated than they were. And he had more land than them. So they had to eventually sell off a little land to keep surviving at a time until they really had no more land. And all the land that was once Oklahoma City was theirs, right? And that is the essence of how a lot of transference of wealth happened from our communities into white hands, right? So, I mean, there's multi different ways. That's one of the ways, right, that we're not able to gain access to the things that we need that are also forms of, that are also reinforced by the government, such as redlining, you know. The United States government enforced that. That's how that began. They said, listen, if you allow Black people to live in these communities, we're not going to allow you to get these HUD money, right? And so the banks were like, forget it then. We won't allow Black people to live in these communities. We're all right with that, you know? And on and on and on and on and on, all right? So our government had to be in collusion for a lot of these things to happen, even the massacre of Black Wall Street that began on May 31st of 1921. There are only two communities ever in the history of the United States that were bombed by the government. One of them is Tulsa. They air bombed them with kerosene bombs. And the second one is the Move in Philadelphia, where they bombed them out of their compound and killed all those people. So my question to you and the audience is, will this experiment be beneficial? I think we should try it, most definitely. I think it's worth moving towards having our own and creating new forms of Black Wall Street. But I think we have to think about it differently. I think it can't be physical locations anymore. I think it has to be digital locations, you know, and new forms of digital currency in which we buy, move around, support each other, and so forth and so on. So I'm asking you, I have a question for you, Olayinka. What do you think? It's the experiment.
I would need time to think that over. I mean, going around in my brain right now. And that's something that a person has to give thought to.
Mm-hmm.
But on, you know, I mean, if I want to give you a quick response, I would say it behooves all of us to hide our growth.
Mm-hmm.
Because out there, they're waiting to step on you, no matter what it is you're doing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can have a little barbershop. They're not going to mess with you.
Mm-hmm.
You can have your little beauty salon over there. Nobody's going to mess with you. Unless something radical is going on in that particular neighborhood, you know. You're the only black barbershop in the neighborhood, and a lot of white people like to come and patronize your shop. But
right.
When you start talking about, I mean, I think it cannot be, I believe it would behoove us not to cluster things. But then if you don't cluster, how do you interact with each other, you know, financially?
Right.
It's something to give thought to. It's not something I can just jump right out there and say.
Well,
especially because of my age, I'm not jumping out there anytime soon. So anybody listening to the show who's younger than I, if you have an opinion, you want to be an entrepreneur, you want to go for it, you know, because there may be money coming, and you're gonna have to learn. You're gonna have to, you know, decide how you're going to spend this money wisely.
Right.
And it may be money coming, you know, in reparations, and you're gonna have to figure out how to spend it wisely so that it can grow for you, you know, and you're not destroyed by your growth.
Yeah, you don't grow too quickly. Well, I really think we need a Marshall Plan in place. If we're going to talk about economic growth, like anybody else, I mean, they went and they rebuilt Germany, right, after the war, and they went and they rebuilt France, right, after the war. And when I say they, I mean United States helped to rebuild these countries, right, after the war. But they have yet to do the internal work of rebuilding the African American and the Native American, right?
Right.
Even though we fought in each and every war and died in each and every war. And that was one of the things that I found interesting when I was listening to a particular historian talk about Black Wall Street. He said they were going away to fight in these wars, right? And they had banners because they didn't have, let me back up, they didn't have anti-lynching laws on the books for black people during that time, right? And so they would hang these banners on the trains as they went to go fight for the United States that said, please do not lynch our family. Please do not kill our families. Please do not murder our families while we go to fight this war for you.
Right?
And I think that is a bitter pill that you know that the Germans, who were supposed to be the enemies, were being treated better than you were, and you were fighting on their side. The German captives, you know, the prisoners of war, when they would capture them, they had the Geneva Convention in place to protect how they got treated, and they got better treatment than you got, and you were on their side fighting to maintain their freedom, you see.
Mm.
And so when I think about this, I think about how there's still a sense of ownership over black and brown bodies that isn't fully discussed. And even you know, and the level of hatred that's involved in being able to see something that you believe you own behaving in a way that is, that doesn't benefit you, right? It only benefits that person who is possessing themselves, that tends to rile white anger and white rage, you know? It's like having something, you perceive yourself being God and having this thing fly in your face, you know, that provokes mm-hmm. that rage. You know, and so when I began to think about, they used to call it Negro Wall Street. Booker T. Washington visited, and he said, "Oh my goodness, this is like a Negro Wall Street," and that kind of stuck. And over the years, it's become Black Wall Street. Right? So when I think about the potential, it's not that, you know, people come to this country and they say, "What's going on with Black Americans?" You have to understand that all of the institutions combined together to destroy us and keep us in this situation, right? That's why they're called institutions. The educational institution, the housing institution, the financial institutions, they all worked and colluded with one another in order to keep us here. So I'm of this, like I said, I'm trying to fix this internal cognitive dissonance that I live with on a regular basis. I am of the mindset that the only way we can get ourselves out of this is to get ourselves out of this, right? We can no longer depend on white people because they feel like, or white thought, I should say that. And when I say white, I'm talking about power construct here because banks are white, like James Baldwin said, you know, schools are white, you know what I mean? The institution of schools, house, that's white, right? But if we're going to free ourselves from that, it behooves us to begin to think about what the liberation looks like for us and how to begin to build these institutions for ourselves. I think that's one of the things, unfortunately, the civil rights movement, it was a unintended consequence of the civil rights movement was that it was it meant the disintegration of all of these institutions that Black people had built for themselves. Like our own insurance companies, banks, schools, you know, all of these things, we just deserted them in this flight for what we believed would be beneficial for or more better for us, you know. White people tend to think that we, when we wanted integration, we wanted to be able to be next to them. No, we wanted the resources that they had access to. And that wasn't always available in our communities, right? We didn't want to be like them. I mean, white people don't want to really be like themselves, if you think about it. I mean, and that comes as a shock because white people, you know, I'm like, I don't want to be white. What are you talking about? I want to integrate. What are you talking about? I don't want to have them elected.
I had a young woman tell me one time, a young white woman, she and I were like neighbors, and we would sit and talk for hours. And one day she told me that she really, 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 really sympathized and felt sorry for me because I was Black. Okay? Uh-huh. I mean, she was sincere because she was looking at the struggle that Black people go through. And I had to look at her, and I smiled and said, "Sweetheart, don't be sorry for me. I'm happy to be Black, you know?" And I had
right.
to what? Because, you
right.
know, there's a lot of white people out there that really sympathize with our plight of Blackness.
Right. Right.
They feel so sorry for us. You know?
But if they really felt sorry, they would change. They would challenge. They would demand that things be different. No. But go on. I'm sorry. Interruption.
No, it's okay. You can interrupt me. It's your show. You got about 15, 20 more minutes of it, and I need to stop interrupting you. Go, baby. Go for it.
That's okay. So, you know, I try to explain that to people, right, that we don't want to be white. Most of us don't. I mean, there are always some outliers. Most of us do not want to be white. We just want you simply out of our way, as James Baldwin says it. We want you to leave us alone and leave our children alone and leave our legacies alone. And let us build the way that we have done so successfully before. But see, now, because of all of the things that have happened to us, psychologically, some of us are not ready. And that's why when you say, we're going to give you this money for reparations because the money is coming, I don't know if I'm going to see that in my lifetime. I am very cynical about it because I am looking at the fact that Republicans and Trump supporters, because now the Trump flag has become the flag that they fly instead of a Confederate flag. You understand me? To show that, you know what I mean? It's no longer the Confederate flag. They're like, oh, we can't fly that. It's a symbol of racism. So we can fly a Trump flag, right? They can't stop us from doing that. So now all these Trump supporters are out there still talking about he's president of the United States, still out there talking about the insurrection that happened was not an insurrection. It's a disagreement. I don't know of any people.
Let us have a disagreement like that.
Right. Where it ends up in people storming the Capitol, smearing, by the way, their feces on the wall. And see, this is what is amazing to me. When they smear the feces on the wall, they don't recognize that only mentally ill people do that. Because people who are not in their, because people who are in their right mind do not pick up their feces and smear it all over the place like they're doing art. And they do this on the very institution of what's supposed to be one of our most sacred, you know, representations of democracy. So they're already telling you that they don't care about democracy. They only care about getting what makes them feel comfortable. Right? And it doesn't matter if it's only if their side wins. That's democracy. No, that's fascism. You know, that's not democracy, you know. So when we talk about these institutions and trying to rebuild ourselves in the face of all of this, I think you're very correct. It has to be a stealthily designed program that steadily gets done because Black Wall Street, they only allowed them to remain prosperous for 20 years before they couldn't take it anymore. And they destroyed them completely. And then tried to cover up their behaviors with mass graves and pulling out the reports that said, oh, yeah, we're going to have a lynching tonight, you know, because the destruction of Black Wall Street happened when a white woman said that a young black man, a shoeshine boy, tried to accost her. And we've had those stories happen over and over and over and over again, even currently today. Right? And so the mob said, so the newspaper was like, ah, you know, they call it yellow journalism. we're gonna be lynching someone tonight. This sounds great, but I think it's really wonderful how they've pulled all of that stuff out of the historical records. You see, those who are in power get to write the history. It's only those who remember it, those who were there during that time, that would recount the papers that they read and recount what actually happened. And so many people said it that they understood that it had to have been correct. And they've even gone back to try to find the news clippings to discover that the paper is there, but the article itself has been ripped out of the historical, you know, the microfiche and everything. They took the picture, but they took it absent after they ripped the article out, you know, removed it. So a lot of people now have been wanting to start a new Black Wall Street. And I think it has to be looked at, like I said, as something different, not necessarily a Black Wall Street, but a financial institution and a financial district. I really would love for the government to be like, hey, this is your, they did the Freedmen's Bank. Let's not do that again because, you know, we put our money in the Freedmen's Bank and they stole it all, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what ended up, that's how we ended up hiding stuff in the chicken coop and under the mattress and buried in the backyard because we could not trust white people with our money. But see, I believe that karmically, this is why depression happened. And this is why Wall Street failed. Right? It failed, what, 8 years later after they mm-hmm. destroyed Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1929, June, maybe not even 8 years later, like 7.5 years. So you cannot, because we don't live in a bubble, and that's what I keep trying to explain to people. You cannot do something to one person and not expect it to affect you at some point, right? That's what we keep seeing, and I don't know what it's going to take for us to learn this lesson. You cannot strip one person of their rights and their civil liberties without it at some point coming back to bite you in the behind. You cannot destroy one person and expect that it will not come and bite you in the behind at some point. We all connected, right? We're mm-hmm. all each other. So I am wondering when it is that those who continue to believe they're comfortable, right, will wake up and say no more. But I'm not sure that those who are comfortable ever do that. I think they're forced into doing that. And I think we have to determine as people of color how we're going to move forward without necessarily worrying about what these other people do. We have to take care of ourselves.
Well, we're coming to time for us to close. And this is the time that I ask anyone in our listening audience if they have a question for Sister or Awal. Before I give you my spiritual words of wisdom, all you have to do, I believe, is press 1, and I'll see your little hand go up and open up the mic for you. Do you have any closing words, sister, before I give my spiritual words of wisdom here?
Pull each other close. Love each other and support one another as much as possible because we are truly reflections of each other.
Absolutely. So, I have a question to pose to everyone. Mm-hmm. Do you know that our bodies are being upgraded and prepped to hold more light or higher light frequencies? Do you know that we're becoming less dense and more liquid? this is not something that's done overnight. It takes a lot of time and energy to adjust to all of this. And this is happening as we all evolve on planet Earth. We need a lot of rest now. Rest is very important. You might find yourself falling asleep while you're watching television, and you never did that before. We need to ground ourselves. We ground ourselves on the land by walking barefoot or just laying down in the grass. I haven't done that in a long time. We need to be out in the sun. We receive many downloads from our sun, Solaris. We have to drink plenty of filtered water. I drink just plenty of water, period. And listen to what our body talks, telling us what it truly needs so it can manage its upgrades. We are all vibrating differently, so our bodies are different. And our bodies have different needs so it can cope with these upgrades. When being emotional, simply let it all flow. We are all, in essence, dying of our old selves, so we are able to be reborn again. So being emotional, all the sadness and grief are all part of the death of our ego that is constantly being shed layer after layer. Say thank you when you're feeling this way, because you're experiencing an ego death or an ego loss, which makes it possible for you to embody more and more of your higher self. Our lower self is literally slowly dying every single day. This is what ascension is all about. We are all becoming new humans attuned to the new earth frequencies. This is why all of us signed up to be here on planet Earth right now. So, sister, hello?
I hear you.
Are we ready to say goodnight to everyone?
Yes, we are.
I love you.
I love you too. And thank you again.
Thank you for being here. I'll talk
Take care
to you
now. Too. Yes, Odabo.
Odabo.
Thank you.